You are listening to the BC Lions Den Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
To the right side, play action fake to Brown, Moule on a roll, downfield wide open, it's the record for G. Roy Simon. He has caught Milt, and Simon says he's the all-time CFL pass receiving leader. At the four-yard line, 4 yards separating McManus and the Lions from a trip to the Grey Cup. Doesn't get better than this. McManus, end zone, touchdown Lions! BC's going to the Grey Cup!
What's going on, CFL fans? Welcome to episode 134 of the BC Lions Den.ca podcast, brought to you by Metal Rocks, custom-made jewelry right here in BC. Check out their link on our website and all the great custom pieces they have to offer. I'm your host, Brian Walrishan, and I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. The BC Lions dropped their home opener to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers last week, and while there were some glaring weaknesses on display, there were also some positives as well. We'll go back and take a look at that game and see where the Lions need to improve this week against the Eskimos. Mike Riley returns to Edmonton this week for the first time against his former club. The Eskimos defeated the Alouettes in their home opener and will be eager to show the fans that life after Mike will be okay. We'll chat with Edmonton Eskimos radio color analyst Dave Campbell to see how the Esks are preparing for this week's big game. Let's bring in Mojo Kemp now and get our Lions discussions going. Mojo, not the way we wanted to start the season, but in the end, the Lions were in the game all night, and it was the play of the defense and a few mistakes that really cost them the game.
Hey, Brian. Hey, everybody. Thanks for downloading the show. Well, there goes my prediction of 18-0, Brian, but that's okay, everybody, because 17-1 is still a good record. And, you know, Brian, we knew it was going to take a little while to gel against one of the best teams in the West.
Yeah, we said that on the podcast last week, that it was going to be a tough opener for the Lions, and Winnipeg certainly is the favorite in the West, or one of the favorites anyway, and they certainly got off to a good start on their end. But let's start with the defense, because really that's what cost the Lions this game. And when you get to the root of it, while the Lions did fairly well defending the pass, getting to the quarterback and the ability to contain Andrew Harris, who ran for 148 yards and caught 5 passes for another 27, was their undoing. The running game allowed the Bombers to maintain the edge in possession time, and there isn't much Mike Riley can do when he's not on the field. This was a concern that we talked about as a potential weakness of this team last week, and sadly, it proved to be true against the Bombers.
Yeah, one of the elite rushers in the game still, Brian, Andrew Harris, but you'd like to see that number. I mean, we all know Andrew Harris is going to get his yards, but you don't want to see a number that high. Again, the front seven, we knew was going to be an issue coming in. Sacks were hard to come by last year, and it seems like we're still there. But you know what? We got to give these guys a chance. They'll get it together.
Yeah, it's just game one and a lot of new faces on this team, so there needs to be some gelling going on for sure. You know, they did have more sacks than the Bombers, and we'll talk about that in a bit, but I was really impressed with the Lions' offensive line last week. Secondary did a pretty good job on the night holding the Bombers to under 200 yards passing, but a lot of that could have to do with the success they were having along the ground. Why pass the ball when Andrew Harris was running at will? The front seven did manage to get to Nichols, as I said, for a couple sacks, but the bottom line is they need to be much better against the run starting this week when they face another solid back in C.J. Gable. You know, those guys in the middle, Claudell Lewis and Devon Coleman, have to start plugging up that middle of the line, and the linebackers have to be a lot better than they were last week.
Yeah, not much more I can add to that, Brian, for sure. You know, we have great expectations for both Lewis and Coleman, and we need them guys because we got such a young linebacking core.
Of course, the other main issue is the running game of the Lions themselves, or the complete lack of one. The Lions rushed the ball just 4 times for a total of 4 yards. and that's not going to get it done no matter who your quarterback is. Successful football is based on a balanced offense that keeps teams guessing, and all Winnipeg had to do was worry about Mike Riley, so they were allowed to pin their ears back and come after the quarterback, although they didn't get there very often.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're only calling four runs a game, hard to blame the running game on that. We all know that the running game needs to establish itself, and you cannot do that when you only get four plays a game.
And Devon Claybrook said there was a lot more run plays called, but they also had options, and Mike opted out of those packages to try and exploit something that he saw on the defense. So we'll take him at his word for that. But obviously, like we said, without a balanced offense, this team isn't going to go very far. As I said, the offensive line was, I thought, was really solid all night long, only giving up one sack to a very good Bombers front seven that includes the likes of Adam Big Hill and Willie Jefferson. We can't judge them on the run blocking when you only rush the ball four times in a game, so there's definitely some positives there. I thought Brett Boyko looked pretty good at the tackle spot. Mike Riley was basically untouched all night, just one sack against charge to the Lions all night. So hopefully they get a chance to push some people around this week in a more balanced offense.
Yeah, they look good. Definitely when you can hold guys to Biggie and Willie Jefferson to one sack, that's, that you'll take that. You would take that any game.
So originally in CFL fantasy, I had chosen Brandon Rutley as my running back. And it wouldn't have mattered who I picked when he rushed the ball four times. But, I learned that John White was going to be starting running back. So I switched my running back to John White. Brandon Rutley ends up returning just kicks, which we'll get into in a minute. But the offensive duties were given to White. And it's hard to judge a guy, like you said, when he only gets four carries. But, you know, we didn't see that straight ahead running that we saw from both he and Rutley in the preseason. Even on those four carries, there was a lot of side to side stuff. And maybe that was the containment of the Bombers. But hopefully, we may see Rutley take over that role in Edmonton. I'm not sure what their plans are, although I did see Rutley returning kicks in practice again this week. So they'll probably go with John White and hopefully get Rutley in there for a few series as well.
Yeah, I thought Rutley did pretty well returning kicks, Brian, surprisingly well, actually. So it's a good way to get both these guys in the game. And the Lions have had not bad success with the platoon system, although I know I don't think the players actually like it that much.
Well, every player wants to play, for sure. The Eskimo strength is on defense and their front seven. So again, the Lions may have to emphasize having success through the air, but it also has to be more balanced than it was last week. And I'd like to see Rutley get a few carries as well, even though he is returning kicks. I think he's a good back. And, you know, if John White starts off slowly again and isn't having success, maybe we'll see Rutley get some reps in the offense as well. As for Mike Riley, he did throw for over 300 yards, which is a pretty normal night for him. But he also threw only one touchdown pass and had two interceptions, both of those to Bomber safety Jeff Hecht, who was in the right place at the right time on the first one after it was tipped. And then he made a nice play to read and step in front of a pass where Riley was trying to force things as the Lions attempted to come back in the fourth quarter. However, you can see that the Lions are going to base this offense on Riley's ability to get the ball downfield, and he had some great chemistry, especially with Brian Burnham, Lamar Durant, and to some extent Daron Carter. So they need to get out of that. So they need to get the running game going in conjunction with that, and they won't be seen as a one-dimensional offense.
Yeah, I was happy with the air attack, although, you know, you'd like to see more than one touchdown, a guy of Mike Riley's ability. And with the receiving core we have, Brian Burnham looks like he's in mid-season form already, Brian.
Yeah, I think he's going to have a huge year, especially if Mike can stay healthy, because, both of them can stay healthy. But, Brian Burnham is just one of the class receivers in the league. And on one series in the first quarter, Riley and the Lions were backed up inside their own 5-yard line. And two plays later, they were in the Bombers' red zone thanks to back-to-back catches by Brian Burnham. The Lions settled for a field goal on that drive. But that series is a prime example of what Riley brings to this offense and an indication that Burnham could be in for a big year.
I think we're going to, it wouldn't surprise me to see three guys over 1,000 yards this year, Brian.
Yeah, well, that's the goal. You got to spread the ball around, and they certainly have the talent to do that. I thought the crowd of 18,058 was pretty disappointing with nothing else really going on that night and all the hype and the marketing the Lions have done around Mike Riley. We talked about it last week, that if Mike Riley can't turn this thing around, we're not sure if anybody can. But it's going to take some time and some wins to get fans coming back. But I thought the game presentation was good, especially the fathers of the felines dancing with their daughters in a tribute to Father's Day. That was pretty neat to see. But disappointing crowd, Mojo. You know, there was a lot of empty seats there.
There were. But, you know, Brian, it wasn't just our stadium. I watched all the games. There were lots of empty seats all around the league. And it's something that the league should definitely be concerned with. I would have liked to seen the 20,000 mark broken. And I saw the video of the fathers and the felines. You know, one of the felines actually grew up in Section 210. Jacqueline, who's now a feline, she grew up in Section 210. So she's like our private dancer, if you will. And, of course, now her dad was out on the field, Big Larry, and we may have a new cartwheel target.
Does he sit in your section as well?
Yeah. He sits right across the aisle from me.
Awesome. So you got a celebrity now in your section, besides you, of course. So let's look ahead to this week's game, and I think it's hard to gauge the Eskimos after a win over the Montreal Alouettes last week. It wasn't like they ran away with the game. In fact, the game was tied late in the fourth quarter before Trevor Harris quickly put an end to that with another touchdown pass. But obviously the Lions are going to need a much more balanced offense, as we said, especially against an Eskimo team that has the ability to get after the quarterback. Pass protection is going to have to be there again, and the running game is going to have to be much better with a commitment to the run as well. It can't be all Mike all the time.
All Mike all the time. No, football is definitely not a one-player game, no matter who that player is. And you got to know emotions are going to be running high for both teams. So let's hope the emotion to get Mike Riley a win is greater than the emotion of let's get Mike Riley a loss that the Edmonton is going to be coming in with.
Yeah, and we're not saying anything that you obviously don't know by now. From the start of the podcast, the Lions also have to find a way to get more pressure on the quarterback. And I think that's the way you make life difficult for Trevor Harris and get him off his game. Linebackers have to provide much better support against the running game of C.J. Gable, who's one of the best running backs in the league. And the defense has to generate some two and outs and hopefully some turnovers to help Riley and the offense stay on the field more.
You know, you'd like to think that this team goes as Mike Riley goes, but really, Brian, it's going to go as the defense goes, because we know that Mike Riley and our offense is going to be able to score some points, especially when they get the running game going. It's all going to be about stopping points, and are our guys going to be able to come together? And hey, you know, next big test this week, and the Lions are gone for 3 weeks, Brian. So you got to win these games.
Yeah, and all first three games are against key West Division opponents as well. Like I said, Riley can't do anything if he's not on the field. So the defense has to get the Eskimos off the field quickly and give Mike as many chances as he can to run this offense and get things going. There's been a lot of talk about Riley's return to Edmonton, and when asked about whether or not he had spoken to Mike Riley about this week's game, head coach Devon Claybrook said the most important thing about this week's game is that it's the next game. You know, he said Riley is a professional and knows that no one player is bigger than the team, so he's not concerned how Riley will handle it, and, you know, quite frankly, neither am I.
No, Riley's a classy guy, a class professional, and you know that he's fully on board. And he's even said he's fully on board, fully immersed with the Lions. So, you know, but you know, he's going to want to come in and put on a good show, Brian.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the Lions arrived in Edmonton today, and he said it was weird walking down the ramp into the visitor's room, but, you know, he's dressed out in his fancy suit and, his first road game hat of the year. He looked pretty sharp. So, you know, Mike is going to be Mike, and he's a true professional, and I think everything will be all right on that front. Interesting to see how the Eskimo fans are going to treat him. We'll talk to Dave Campbell here in a sec about what the vibe is like in Edmonton with Riley coming back to town. But, you know, hopefully they'll get a few more people out too, because, you know, they only had 25,000 for their game. I mean, we'd love to get 25,000 to a game, but usually they're up around 33,000. So a big drop in the numbers there for the Eskimos. We'll see if more come out to see Mike Riley return to Edmonton. With the home opener out of the way, and, you know, there's a lot of pressure to perform for the home crowd, not only on the field, but off the field as well, to try and get some interest in this team. Hopefully the Lions can come in and play mentally sound football this week and tune out the Riley noise and get their first win of the season.
Yeah, in the Western, in this Western division, Brian's going to be so close, so tight. You definitely don't want to start the season 0-2.
And right now, it's as we record this, it's looking pretty positive for the Lions as the Ottawa Redblacks are up 38-27 over the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Pretty good game going on there, but hopefully the Ottawa Redblacks can hold on to that lead and send the Riders to 0-2, which is certainly going to help the Lions out in the West Division as well.
These Ottawa Redblacks, Brian, I'm a little surprised by them. I know it's early, but their big comeback win over the Stamps last week, and now they've put in 38 points tonight so far. They're definitely putting in points.
So guess who the next team is that has to go into McMahon Stadium to face the Stampeders. after they lose their first game of the year at home.
Well, you know, like we know, man, if you're going to go anywhere in the West, you got to beat Calgary. You got to beat Winnipeg. I mean, you got to beat all the teams. It doesn't matter. And they just got to get it to go. But, you know, like we've been saying, Brian, it's going to take a while for these guys. New coach, new coaches, new systems, new players. It's going to take a while. Hey, and, you know, like you said, they were in it for most of the game.
Yeah, they were. And I think little things need to be fixed, right? Like, I believe it was Odell Willis this week that was saying that, the Lions defense is based off of communication. And if they don't communicate, they're going to look bad. So hopefully they've got those kinks ironed out and we'll see a much improved effort from the Lions defense this week. I want to talk about, before we get to Dave Campbell here, I want to talk about the Simone Lawrence situation. CFL handed down a two-game suspension to Simone Lawrence for his hit on Zach Collaros. The CFL announced today officially that they were going to appeal that decision, so Simone Lawrence is likely to play this week against the Toronto Argonauts. What do you think about that, Mojo? We talked about it last week about it being time for, you know, the CFL PA to start protecting the injured player and not the offender. I know they have a duty to protect Simone Lawrence, but, it boggles my mind when you have so many players complaining about player safety. And then when the league tries to do something about it, the league or the CFL PA throws its hands in the air and says, oh, that's too harsh of a punishment and this and that. Randy Ambrosi came out today and stated that he was disappointed with the PA's decision to appeal. The CFLPA put out their own statement saying they were disappointed in Randy Ambrosi going public with his comments. It's a good thing we have a CBA signed or else, we could be in some trouble here. But I can see a little bit of what the PA is saying. You know, you look at the Jonathan Rose incident where he pushed an official to the ground in the East Final last year and didn't end up with any suspension, just was fined. Simone Lawrence does what he does and gets two games. So there's a bit of inconsistency there. You think pushing an official to the ground in the way that Jonathan Rose did would have got him a game or two, but he didn't. They're saying there's no precedent for this type of suspension, but I think if you're going to get serious about player safety, you have to set a precedent somewhere, and it doesn't matter if Lawrence has been suspended in the past or not. It was a clear, dirty hit and a clear hit that we're trying to get out of this game. So I'm fine with the two games. I hope he loses his appeal and he gets his two games. But what are your thoughts on all of that?
Yeah, like you, Brian, I'm disappointed. We knew what the union was going to do. We knew that they were going to appeal any sentence Simone Lawrence got. But it doesn't matter what happened last year. It doesn't matter what happened in the playoffs. If you're going to get this crap out of the game, you have to start somewhere. And that they had the perfect opportunity to just say, you know what? It was a bad hit. And if the dude was truly apologetic about it, he wouldn't be appealing. He would not be appealing his two-game suspension.
Yeah, and he's going to miss a couple game checks if he misses those two games, and everybody's saying, well, you're taking away the guy's livelihood. Well, he did that to himself, for one. And two, I read this week And I'm not sure about the validity to this, but Zach Collaros' contract is heavily incentive based. He's not going to have a chance to hit those incentives. So who's concerned about the money that Zach Collaros is losing? Not only his health, but his financial situation as well. So I get it. It's a union. Unions do union things, and I think it's just unfortunate. I think Simone Lawrence should man up and take his punishment. Like you said, if he's truly sorry, then he'll do the time for the crime that he committed. And we'll see what happens with the appeal, but I certainly hope that whatever arbitrator gets assigned this case sides with the commissioner and the CFL, and Simone Lawrence gets his two games and learns a lesson. And not only Simone Lawrence, but all players in the CFL learn a lesson that, you know, we got to get these hits out of the game. And if you do one of these hits, you're going to sit.
Yeah, I'm pretty disappointed in the union on this. But not my union, not my dues. So they're going to do what they're going to do. But hey, we called it. We knew, you know, they are who we thought they were.
And with that, let's get the Edmonton story right now with a regular guest to the show. It's always great to have Eskimos radio color man Dave Campbell of 650 Ched in Edmonton join us. And we have him on the line now. Dave, welcome back to the podcast. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Nice to be here, Brian. Thank you.
Well, Dave, the CFL schedule makers didn't make the Lions and Eskimos wait too long to go to battle. And of course, the game features the return of Mike Riley to Edmonton. What's the buzz like in Edmonton leading up to this game?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement, and there's, I think, a bit of angst as well, because there's a lot of fans that are still, sad, upset, angry, understanding. There's a range of emotions when it comes to Eskimo fans about number 13 leaving Edmonton for Vancouver. So, I talked to Mike Riley about it today. And by the way, it was weird to see him in his top hat, in those fancy hats at Commonwealth Stadium, because that never happened on walkthrough day. So it was really weird to see that. But that's when it kind of really, this is really real. But, I think the fact that this is week two of the schedule, that Mike Riley is coming back to Edmonton, I think it's kind of a good thing for him. It's a good thing for the Eskimos, good thing for the Lions. It gives kind of an early season storyline that I think a lot of people can get behind. And, there's not a lot of, there's stories, but there's not like the real playoff matchups or playoff races right now. You know, it's kind of hard to find, the quality matchups. It's everything is so new. I said quality matchups and the quality storylines. It's kind of hard to find those right now. And we have a juicy one here in week two with Mike Riley coming back to Edmonton.
Yeah, for sure. The Eskimos defeat the Montreal Alouettes last week in their home opener in a game that was probably closer than it should have been when you look at the stats line. What did you like about their performance, and where do you think there is room for improvement?
Well, 607 yards of offense, that's a great place to start. Mm-hmm. That was, I think, really unexpected, even with the Montreal Alouettes, who I think there are a lot of question marks from everybody that watches the league, that's in the league and follows and covers the league about them. And really, I didn't expect the Eskimos offense to come out and like that because they're so new quarterback, a lot of new personnel, familiar coaches, but they haven't coached this particular group before, and this particular group hasn't been coached by them. So Trevor Harris looked great. I mean, Trevor Harris looked like he was in control, understood what was in front of him. And man, does he release that ball quickly? Like, you see it on television. I've seen obviously a few games where the Eskimos have played against Trevor Harris, but you don't really see them unless you see their, literally understand it or doesn't sink in. You watch him in practice, you watch him in games. Man, does he ever get that ball out of his hands real, real fast? So that really impressed me. The run game was impressive. They had balance with C.J. Gable. Defensively, it was pretty good, except for the quarter. They kind of, I don't know what the term is. I thought when Don Yadamba got injured in the first half, last play of the first half, and they had to make the adjustments in the second half, I thought it looked good for a while, but then when they made the switch from Antonio Pipkin to Brennan Adams, there's a veteran quarterback, even though he hasn't had a lot of starts, but he's been in the league long enough, I think, to understand CFL defense, if he came in and picked the Eskimo secondary apart. So it had a bit of adversity in week one. I don't think it's early, too early in a season to face adversity. The Eskimos did face it, and they did something that they didn't do very well last year, and that's come up big in the fourth quarter and win a game.
Hey, Dave, we mentioned Trevor Harris and his impressive debut. That's got to make the Eskimo faithful feel a little bit better. From what we've heard in the media, Trevor Harris looks like he's changed his training schedule around a bit, trying some new stuff. I hear he did some boxing, and he looks pretty determined to make his own legacy at Edmonton after replacing a guy like Mike Riley. How tough has it been for Trevor Harris to come in and replace a guy like Riley?
It's not an easy scenario, I think, for any quarterback, but I remember what Trevor Harris said the day he was signed on February the 12th. He opened it at the agency. He said, "I've replaced Ricky Ray, I've replaced Henry Burris, and now I'm replacing another legendary quarterback in Mike Riley. It's all I know." So he's come in with, basically coming in with his own script. He's not worried about replacing the previous quarterback. He just wants to come in and be himself. So I think he's handled it very, very well. And, I remember the first training session was the day before at medical day. And I asked him about how come together, how do you do that in a quick enough fashion, but at the same time, not really rush the process because there was a new with the offense. And he said, we first have to trust and care for each other. And that's how you're going to build the chemistry. I mean, that was really a comment that resonated with me. So he's someone that's going to come in, compared to Mike Riley, who's got, he's a big personality. He's a big-time leader. He's the ultimate leader. But Trevor Harris is more of a guy that's going to, kind of bring guys together. Not that Mike Riley doesn't do that, but Mike Riley has a different, leadership style, and he's going to be a heck of a lot more demanding in his leadership style than Trevor Harris, where it's going to be more, hey, guys, we're in it together. We can win together. We've got to trust and care for each other. So, I think we're seeing, Trevor Harris as a leader, and he's doing it in ways where, that we haven't really seen a lot in Edmonton over the last 6 years because Mike Riley was such a big, big-time ultimate leader. And Trevor Harris, he doesn't do it in the big brash way. He does it in his own way. He's quiet about his business. He doesn't joke a lot with the media. But, the funniest story, it's funny, you bring up the boxing angle here, Mojo. And I remember in training camp, he said, his dad was a corrections officer and boxed prisoners for fun. And I think that's the first time we looked at Trevor Harris who said, "What did you just say?" So that was a really, really humorous moment in training camp. So I think overall Trevor Harris has come in and he took on the role. It's kind of intimidating to do that if you're an outsider to Edmonton, because the Eskimos are, it's a different type of environment. It's a different type of, demand. The expectations are very high among Eskimo fans, and it's hard to live up to that pressure. So coming out and, slinging for 447 yards in his first game, that's a pretty high bar. So he's not going to do that every game, but he's off to a good start. And I think he's come in and he's been himself, and he doesn't have to be Mike Riley. He's got to be Trevor Harris, and he's looked the part.
You mentioned chemistry earlier in your answer there, and one of the guys he seems to have developed some chemistry with is Kenny Stoppard, who another guy who's reportedly come in into camp in great shape. What challenge does Kenny Stoppard have before him? Because after losing guys like Darrell Walker and Duke Williams, Kenny Stoppard needs to be a guy that's going to step up.
Yeah, no. I remember in training camp, he and Natea Jay, they're the only two holdovers from the offense from last season. And, I remember something that Tay said, that I'm getting a lot more questions. And that's what Kenny Stafford said as well, is people are coming up asking me questions. And it's, they're used to having it the other way. So they had no choice but to become leaders. They had to do it because, sure, you're going to bring in Greg Ellingson and DeVaris Daniels and Ricky Collins Jr. And you're going to bring in Tavon Smith, who was drafted by the Eskimos in the first round in 2016. Lots of hype around him. But they don't know the offense like Kenny Stafford and Isaiah Jay. So they have to really step up and take the leadership role and be the ones to answer the questions instead of being the ones to ask the questions. So it was a role reversal. Yeah, Kenny Stafford lost to a nice start too, almost 180 touchdowns. He worked out with Trevor Harris in the offseason to develop some chemistry down in the state to get a bit of a rapport. And Ken Stafford needs to have a big year. It's funny, last year he had a career high. Most of that yardage came in the first half. I thought he was a player that unfortunately disappeared too much in the second half. Dropped some footballs, maybe wasn't disciplined with his route running. And I think that's the biggest difference with Kenny Stafford on the field as well, is he's a disciplined route runner so far, and it showed last week against the LOS with two touchdowns. He was great.
Dave, we haven't talked since free agency, but I really liked what GM Brock Sunderland did in free agency after losing Riley to the Lions. He got himself a top-tier quarterback, brought in that QB's most familiar receiver in Greg Ellingson, and then restocked his linebackers as well. I thought he did really well with the money he had to spend. What were your thoughts on how he was able to restock this team?
I was blown away, to be honest with you. I was completely blown away with the day that Brock Sunderland had. And, you know, going into that weekend, it was pretty grim here in Edmonton, because everyone knew that Mike Riley was going to be leaving when Brock Sunderland reportedly, he never said this publicly, but it did happen, that he granted the permission for Mike Riley to speak with other teams and vice versa. Like, he knew he was going to lose him at that point. And when it came out publicly, this fan base, I tell you, it was, I mean, I think I turned into a guidance counselor instead of a football reporter and a color analyst at that point. It was, you know, kind of funny, right? But then Mike Riley got signed, and then all of a sudden you see the rumors kicking up about Trevor Harris. Then you see the rumors kicking up about Sir Vincent Rogers, Larry Dean, Javon Santos Knox, Don Unaba, and on and on and on. You know, Brock Sunderland said all along, our plan A was always to re-sign Mike Riley, but we do have a plan B. And he kept that under his hat, obviously, because you have to before free agency starts. And once it started, we saw the plan come together. The only sad part about this, guys, is the fact that so many of those guys are not on the field yet. You know, we saw Anthony Orange and Don Unaba for week one. Unaba only lasted a half. Orange lasted the whole game, and then practice day one this week, and then a practice day two, day three. Well, both he and Unaba on the six-game injury list. Haven't seen Javon Santos Knox yet. Haven't seen DeVaris Steele yet. Now, that's the only downside right now, is that we haven't seen the full complement of the free agent signings on the field. It's the funny part. For Brock Sunderland to come out and have a great day like he did, you know, to stand up and have that plan B and say, I'm not going to just sit here and wallow and give up, you know, losing Mike Riley. He stood up and said, nah, I got a plan and I'm going to implement it. And boy, did he ever.
Yeah, it was really impressive. You know, the offensive line looked to be improved as well with the signing of Sir Vincent Rogers, but torn tricep has him on the sidelines for at least half the season. Tommy Draheim, who had a short stint here in BC, has stepped into that role. How did that unit perform last week? And do you think the S are okay there as they wait for Rogers to return?
I think that was an unsung story from the game last Friday, is how well that offensive line played, especially Tommy Draheim, who's he started the last play game and focused on in that game and gutted it out till the end. And then we didn't see him until the last three games of the season, or four games of the season. It's funny, the Eskimos were 3-1 with Draheim in the lineup. So, mm-hmm. You know, that they were able to win games with him. So when Sir Vincent Rogers tore his tricep in training camp, everyone thought the worst. And, you know, you go look up Wikipedia and you say, okay, 6 months, could be a year. Okay, it's not good. But the fact that he finished practice was an encouraging sign. And, you know, he should be back within, I don't know, I mean, it's June 20th now when we're talking. So, you know, he should be ready around Labor Day. I think that's the target date. But, you know, the depth on the O-line has come through so far with Draheim, who just took over that left tackle spot and didn't look back. So he took that over, and the Eskimos haven't missed a beat. David Beard at center, I mean, he basically won that job during the season over Justin Sorensen, who, you know, hasn't been signed by anybody at this point. And, you know, Jacob Ruby's come in and flipped the ratio at left guard. It was the Travis Lawn spot last year. They had three Americans on the line. Now they have three Canadians. So you got, you know, Colin Kelly coming back, who I think so far has had a good start to the season. He's been kind of average to above average last 2 years. Matt O'Donnell's back at right guard where he should be. Probably played too many games at left tackle. Played admirably, but that's not his spot. It's at right guard. And then another pleasant surprise, Vintal Saxon, the second round draft pick, one of those American Canadians. He's born in California. His mom was born in New Brunswick. And he's come in for a guy that doesn't know really a lick about Canadian football. Man, he's got ball skills. He's excellent. He's an excellent tackle. He can play guard. So he's their sixth offensive lineman right now. And he has looked really, really good.
Dave, with all those injuries you mentioned earlier, which one's got you concerned the most, and who needs to come in and step up?
Yeah, it's hard to pick between Anthony Orns and Don Unamba. I would say right now, I would say Unamba is a slightly larger concern as far as the impact of that injury. You know, they're going to use Brian Walker in the game on Friday against the Lions. He had a great training camp. Won a job on the practice roster, and now he's up on the active roster, and he'll start on Friday. He looked good in the preseason. Josh Johnson, of course, that's a familiar name to BC Lions fans. He's good. You know, it's interesting with Josh Johnson because Anthony Orange missed pretty much all of training camp, came back a bit for the third week, but he and Javon Santos Knox were kind of, just working their way back from. Knox had a broken ankle, suffered in the final game of the regular season in Edmonton. Orange had some difficulty with shoulder last season. So they were working through injuries. And so it is very much so. Specifically, Orange, Josh Johnson was playing that short side corner spot. So he's Friday. And been there and kind of comfortable. And, Josh Johnson is a very versatile player and is a veteran in this league. And he's not too bad. Tyquan Glasson played short side half. That's a bit of a concern, I think, because even though he had a good camp, came in last week at the Sam spot for Donnie Namba. Or no, he played in the secondary because he moved Johnson to Sam, and he struggled a little bit last. So I think Unamba's injury is a bit of a concern. You hope Ryan Walker can hold up because Mike Riley's looking at the depth chart and going, okay, I see all these changes, and he's going to attack the secondary anyway. But he's going to salivate a bit more when he needs some experience, even though they have some experience in that secondary. But it's not the same. Anthony Orange in there, right? So that's definitely a bit of a downgrade. But so we'll see. It's kind of exciting, and we'll see how they hold up.
The Lions plucked offensive lineman with the most French name I've ever heard, Jean-Simon Lavoie, and I don't know if he actually is that French, and that's how he pronounces it. Maybe you could enlighten me on that, Dave.
Well, we went by J.S. Lavoie, so we just forgot that. We just dropped the Jean-Simon, and we went J.S.
So what type of player did the Lions get, and do you think this kid's ever going to start in the league one day?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I know the plan for the Eskimos was, he's basically just going to be on the practice roster. He was going to keep on developing. There was no short-term plan to put him in the lineup at all. And, this is a 2017 second-round draft pick out of Laval, who I think at the time was just, more thought about being a, kind of a backup to Justin Sorensen perhaps. But then David Beard, he had a really good season last year and played some center in 2017 as well. So, and then J.S. Watt tore up his knee in Winnipeg in a game in August. So, that didn't help either. So I think he's just someone that's been, just trying to cut his teeth. And, to me, I guess the Lions have some depth. You probably know that more than I do, but, I was a bit surprised to see J.S. Watt be plucked from the practice roster. So, that was a little surprising, I think. But if Ed Hervey sees a more of a short-term or short-term/long-term plan for J.S. Watt, great, because I don't think there was one with the Eskimo. So hopefully he'll get an opportunity.
And of course, Lions fans are saying, "Oh, great, another Eskimo." So
only 13 Eskimos.
The Lions attendance issues are well documented. Lions fans are reminded of it basically after every home game the team plays. But the Eskimos had a smaller crowd by their standards for their home opener as well, with 25,000 and change in the building. What do you attribute that decline to?
Wait, how long do you got? There's a lot of theories about this.
Yeah.
Well, I think one, and this is not in any order of importance, or I'm not ranking this at all when I mention this, but the first thing I'll mention is weather. The weather was not great here last Friday, and they haven't had the best luck with the weather. Last year, I think 8 of their 10 home games, and including preseason, were affected by weather in some way, and then it happened again last Friday. We had a early afternoon thunderstorm, but then there were calls for thunderstorms throughout the day. And I don't know. I think attitudes of fans about going to an outdoor sporting event has kind of changed. If there's even a chance of a drop of rain, they kind of err on the side of caution, I guess. So I don't know. That's part of it. But I think more importantly, I think there's still some dissatisfaction with the organization. I know. Len Rhodes, who's no longer the president and CEO, he was in that role for 7 years. He took on a lot of blame for a lot of things, and I think he took on too much blame for a lot of things. I mean, a lot of people are going to point to Ed Hervey and his firing, and no one, diehard Eskimo fans, a lot of them will never live that one down. And Len Rhodes tried to think outside the box with some of the concerts that he brought to Edmonton for halftime shows, and they were mixed, but he made the Eskimos a ton of money in the corporate area, but unfortunately for the last, I would say 10 years, this decline in attendance has been a concern. They haven't had a crowd of 40,000 in 5 years. So, it's just not happening anymore. They kind of closed down some more sections of the stadium. I think I saw five sections. Kind of rows of seats. So there's about, I guess, 10 to 20 rows of seats that have been, closed or tarped off in the upper deck just to kind of get the crowd kind of closer to the middle of the stadium and fill up that lower bowl. I think there is some Eskimo fans that, are not happy with some decisions that were made by the Eskimos from the president on down. And, and they don't have a president right now. I hear they're getting close. I have no idea who the names are. But the next president is going to have a tough job because, they're going to be asked to fill the building. And, the person asking the question about how do you fill the building probably knows himself or herself that you can't fill the building anymore, right? But what is a good crowd? What is deemed a good crowd now? And if this team could get 30 to 35,000 in that range in most games, I think we could probably, I hate to use the word settle, but I think we could all accept that. But it's hard. It's hard to know what the problems are. And I think Dave Jamieson had a good point. I remember listening to him, and I'm bringing up the competitor radio station where he works on. But I remember him talking about, and of course Dave, he was a longtime marketing and media a vice president for the Eskimos for a number of years. I think the world of Dave, he was the best in business at the time. But, he said the Eskimos are not just a sporting option, but they're an entertainment option. The Oilers, they're automatic here. We can talk Oilers 12 months out of the year, which, can cause eye rolls. And you understand that living in Vancouver with the Canucks. But for the Eskimos, I think their marketing has to get a bit better and more creative. And I think we've seen that a little bit. I mean, Fred Stamps retirement night was great. And you can get, there was a promotion to get seats for $22.22. That's great. And beyond that, they need a winning product and a consistent product. And I think I don't know if the fan base trusts the organization and they're going to make the best decision. So, since the Ed Hervey firing, I think there's been a ton of anger within this fan base about why it was done, and there were reasons, but, fans saw Ed Hervey as a winner, and it's hard to get beyond that, when you're a fan of the team. So if this is Rock Sutherland's team now, I think a lot of people were impressed with Doug Wilson's agency. I think he won some people over. Now the team has to win some games, but I think the Eskimo fan is saying, I need a reason to come back, and right now, they're going to get to 25,000 to 26,000 attendance for games pretty much almost every game. They just don't have the walk-up like they used to. So they got to find a way to get that walk-up back.
Yeah, you think a win over Mike Riley might get some of those fans back.
That would help.
Yeah. What are ticket prices like there, Dave? I know in BC there's a lot of people complaining about the ticket prices, like a ticket between the 30-yard lines will set you back $90 in BC. Is it comparable in Edmonton for pricing, or what do you know about that?
I think it's pretty, you know, it's funny, you know, being in the media, unfortunately, I don't look at that.
Yeah, I guess not.
I'm sorry about that. But when I last looked, I think their top ticket was close to around $90 to $100, and then you got some other parts of the stadium where they're, you know, it's lower. I think the cheapest ticket you can get is, without being in a family zone, is $33 to $38, $39, somewhere in that range.
So that's more than the last one, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know. It's hard for me to tell fans to spend their money because, you know, I have a different role, obviously. So, yeah. You know, this is my job compared to, I love football, trust me, but it's my job compared to plunking down money and spending money on a ticket. So, I mean, I know it's a lot cheaper than an Oilers game, I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know. I think what I could say about the ticketing is are there ways for the Eskimos and every team in the CFL to find a way, especially the Lions? And I mean, I've had many conversations with Rick Wallisher about this. He's trying, but the market in Vancouver is, it's a tough market, but mm-hmm. you know, he's pretty innovative in the marketing aspect. So they're trying a lot of new things, and I think the Eskimos are doing as well. I think if you can find a way to find a cheaper ticket, even if it's for short term, for a short time, I think the Eskimos do have a 3-game mini pack. So that's a nice thing, mm-hmm. To buy into a third of the season and then maybe that turn into a full season. So I think if you can do that, on occasion, and have some ticket prices in a flex pack or in a promotion where they're a little bit less, then I think that might help, and maybe the fan would want to spend more money. But I think, you know, it's winning in some respects, but I think in the CFL, winning doesn't automatically mean you're going to have success at the gate. So I think, you know, all 9 teams in the CFL office in Toronto have to get more creative on how to bring fans in, bring them back, and find new fans.
Hey, Dave, what have the Eskimos got to do to beat the Lions this week? And conversely, what do the Lions got to do to beat the Eskimos?
Well, I think if you are the Lions, let's start on offense, because that's where I think everyone would agree that's the most confidence I think anyone would have against the Lions, because no offense against defense. I just can't see that unit getting much better than they are now. You know, maybe they get marginally better, but let's just say I just don't like that front seven. I just don't like it. I like a lot of pieces in that secondary, but I don't think that front seven has enough there to really disrupt offenses. So they're going to have to rely on their offense, I think, a lot, especially early on. So, you know, for Mike Riley, I think from a defensive standpoint, you better not give him the same look twice in a row. He is so good at looking at film and understanding what he sees. And if he sees it on the field and recognizes what he sees on field is what he saw, you know, during the prep week on film, he will kill you. And he is someone that is going to attack secondaries no matter who's there. But if he's going to look and see Josh Johnson is not there, or Josh Johnson is there for Orange, and he's going to see, you know, Tyquan Glass, who doesn't have a lot of experience at halfback spot on the boundary side. You got Brian Walker, the experience with Sam. You know, and you got Gosh Granieta, who's a second-year player with limited experience on the wide corner. You know, you're going to, you know, Money Hunter, who's a second-year player at safety. You're going to probably lift your chops a little bit. What impressed me about the stat that really jumped out at me last week was Mike Riley was 3 for 12 on attempts of 20 yards or more. So that's not very good. But it's the 12 that impressed me. And I go, that's Mike Riley. That's what he tries to do, is he's going to try to attack and take a shot. So I think for the Eskimos, they got to prepare for that. And they got to realize that if you're defensive back, you might have to hold on to your guy a bit longer, because Mike Riley's going to hang on to the football and try and get someone open. Now, conversely, that could be bad news for Mike Riley, because I saw a lot of Edmonton where, you know, he would hang on to the ball a little bit too long, and his offensive line can only protect for so long. You know, I think the Eskimos are going to try and get some pressure on him and hit him early. And no matter how tough Mike Bradley is, and he is, you know, he's razor tough, he is not going to like that very much, let's just say that. And I think for, you know, from an offensive standpoint for the Eskimos, I think they just got to do what they did last week. And, you know, Trevor Harris is a high percentage passer. He's going to take the ball with the defense, of course, he's going to take the ball. But, you know, he's very good at finding the open guy. And I think Jason Moss, the new offensive coordinator, Jordan Maksimek, had a good game plan where, you know, they tried to widen out the Montreal Alouettes, and then that's where the seam routes open. That's where Richie Collins Jr. and Greg Ellingson and Kenny Stafford did their damage. So if they can do that against the defense, that they got to get more push to the quarterback. But if they don't, Trevor Harris is going to have a field day. So, you know, and conversely, I think the defense has to find a way to disrupt Trevor Harris, get more pressure on him, get more hits on him as well. So, you know, and I think that's basically where it's going to come down to. And then you look at the special teams. You know, Brandon Rutley had a great game last week. Well, we're going to see Marquise Jackson for the first time for the Eskimos since he re-signed early in training camp. Jordan Robinson did the duties last week, but didn't have a good game until that, you know, 36-yard kickoff return on the final, that set up the final drive, that set up the final score and the winning score for the Eskimos. So, yeah, that's where I would look, you know, in all three phases tomorrow.
Well, David certainly has the makings of a big game early on in the season. It's only week two, but we're looking forward to it. Thanks for your time tonight. It's always a pleasure. Enjoy the game, and we'll chat with you soon.
Fellas, can't wait for the next time. Enjoy it.
Mojo, it's a pretty big game for the Lions as they try and get a notch in the win column. Three straight games against the West to start the season is no joke, and they need to win against these teams if they hope to contend in the West. If you want to hear more about this week's opposition, we highly recommend you check out our Canadian Football Podcast Network friends over at the Eskimo Empire Podcast. Visit eskempire.ca for access to their latest shows.
Great show, the Edmonton Empire Podcast, Brian. Great shows all year round this year. I'm always very impressed by the level of the shows in the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Like we said earlier, real tough start of the season. You don't want to start 0-2. We're going to run into a pissed off Calgary Stampeders group after their loss last week to Ottawa. So you want to pick this game up.
Well, we're not really going to go through our picks this year each week, but I can tell you I went 2-2 last week with BC and Calgary, of all teams, letting me down. I'm going to take the Lions this week again. If they lose again, I might have to go back to the BC Lions Den podcast curse and pick against them, try and get things on the right track. But I think they're going to rebound this week and rally around Mike returning to Edmonton and have a good performance this weekend, Mojo.
I think so too, Brian. I went 1-2. I missed the first game because that's the way I do my pick 'em. You know, if I can get 3 out of 4 games in, I'm usually pretty happy. But this week, I'm also going to go with the Lions, Brian. I got the Red Blacks going tonight, which is good for me. And, of course, I think Hamilton will take Toronto no problem. So if you want to get ahead in the game, those are my picks. You might want to pick the opposite, folks.
Oh, I picked exactly the same as you. I took the Red Blacks as well, just based on the fact that, you know, the Riders are kind of playing musical quarterbacks, or they're, we thought they were anyway. Cody Fajardo is actually having a pretty good night tonight. Last we looked, they're down by, what is it now, Mojo? What's the score?
38-27. Looks like the Red Blacks are lining up for a field goal.
So 11-point lead as we speak here. So looking good for the Red Blacks, and we hope they can continue that. That's it for episode 134, and I want to thank Eskimos color analyst Dave Campbell of 650 Ched in Edmonton for joining us tonight. Thanks to our sponsor, Metal Rocks. Make sure to check out what they have to offer in the way of handmade jewelry that's made right here in BC at https://etsy.com/ca/shop/Metal Rocks. This show is part of the Canadian Football Podcast Network, and make sure to check out all the great shows that are part of it at cfpodnetwork.ca and follow the network on Twitter at cfpodnetwork. Please subscribe and listen to the show on your favorite podcast app. Visit us at bclionsden.ca. Follow us on Twitter at bclionsden and at mojokemp, and on Instagram at bclionsden_podcast. And that's podcast, PAWDCAST. Let's hope Mike Riley can lead the Lions into his former team stadium and pick up the Lions' first win of the season. They're going to need to be at their very best against a balanced Eskimos team who will be very eager to show Riley made the wrong choice coming to BC. It should be a great game. Until next week, on behalf of Mojo Kemp and myself, enjoy the game this weekend. And as always, roar, you Lions, roar.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.